What is up, everybody? Adrian M. Gibson here. What you're about to hear is the audio version of a live author panel recorded at TBRCon 2023. TBRCon is an all-virtual sci-fi, fantasy, and horror convention that I directed and organized and was founded by David Walters of FanFi Addict. And this year we had the pleasure of hosting 30 author panels, which were absolutely amazing, and I highly recommend checking them out. But since so many of you listen to podcasts and prefer that over watching things on YouTube, I have published this live author panel here on the SFF Addicts podcast feed. I'll be releasing a new author panel every Friday until they run out. So until then, sit back and enjoy this week's TBRCon 2023 author panel. Enjoy.
Okay, and I guess we are live. To everybody in the audience who has not seen a panel before out of this particular year, welcome to TBRCon 2023. To everyone else who has already seen a few so far, welcome back. Today we are doing how to write a kick-ass battle, and we have an amazing group of panelists here for you today, and I will let them introduce themselves. And to start, we will begin with RJ Barker.
Hello, I'm RJ Barker. I'm a UK-based author. I was going to say North-based author, but that's quite sort of large in it, the North. There's a whole hemisphere of the world. UK-based author, and I've written the Wounded Kingdom books, which were about an assassin, and the Boneship books, Tide Child books, of which this is the last one, Call of the Boneships, and they are naval-based books. And I live in a castle of dead things, as you can probably see in the background.
And next, if we could get Miles Cameron to give us his little introduction.
Hi, I'm Miles Cameron. Some of you might know me because I do something called Writing Fighting. I write fantasy. I wrote the Red Knight series. I'm getting into science fiction. I actually have one of my own books to show off. And some of you may care that I'm going to start writing the sequel to this, Deep Black, in about 2 weeks. I don't live in a castle. Sorry.
What about dead things? The dead things.
No dead things. But and if we could get Anna Smith Spark to give us her introduction.
Hi, I'm Anna Smith Spark. I'm the author of the Empires of Dust series, the Course Broken Knives, the Tower of Living and Dying, the House of Sacrifice, which are sort of epic, grimdark, total war novels, and my new book, A Woman of the Sword, which is about a woman who is a soldier in a huge epic total war fantasy battle world, and her negotiation, her dealing with being a woman with children and also a soldier and a very talented professional soldier, and that's sort of very much about her and her life, negotiating parts of her life.
Excellent, thank you. And Andrea Stewart, if you could introduce yourself to the panel.
Yeah, sure. I'm Andrea Stewart. I write fantasy and science fiction. I'm probably best known for my Drowning Empire series, The First of the Witches, The Bone Shard Daughter. And that's it, really.
No worries. And Nick Martell.
Hi. I'm Nick Martell. I wrote the Legacy of the Mercenary King series, which The Kingdom of Liars, the first one. It's about, you know, unreliable narrator and a lot of messy memory magic problems. And yeah, that's me.
Excellent. Thank you very much, everyone, for being here, for doing the panel. I'm going to be the moderator today. My name is Evan Winter, and I wrote The Rage of Dragons, and it's part of the Burning Quartet. So, I'm going to jump right in and waste no time, because I'm going to try and sort of like get all the knowledge I can out of these incredible writers. So here we go. First of all, I'm not good at picking favorites, but just in case you're all better than me, do you have a favorite fight and or battle scene from a book? And if so, what is it? And what about it made it work so well for you? We'll start with Miles Cameron.
Okay, I hope this isn't too deconstructionist. My favorite battle scene is in a book called Master and Commander by Patrick O'Brien. And what I find magical, because I've read a million naval books, and I think I share this with R.J. Barker, is that the battle scene is mostly told retrospectively. There's no particular tension because you know that the main character has won. He is literally writing his letter to the Admiralty describing it. And yet, because it is mostly about who was killed, including major characters that you have come to love, it is a very moving scene, and it turns on its head most of the expectations of a battle scene. And he stops a couple of times in his letter to remember what he saw in flashes, which is, I don't know, I just found it moving and original and nothing like what the genre of naval fiction usually produced in a battle scene.
Oh, wow. You definitely sold that book to me. Okay. And Anna Smith Spark, for you.
Oh, goodness. So actually, the battle scenes in War and Peace for me are just absolutely... There's one particular scene where Nikolai, who's a young, is for that young, eager, young, aristocratic Russian man, he's gone off to fight. So we've got Napoleon's invaded Russia. Nicholas is going to fight. And there's this amazing scene where he just has no idea what's going on. There's this wonderful scene. He's riding around on his horse and he sees one of his friends riding around on his horse in front of him. And he's like, oh gosh. And then things are sort of like, gosh, there are sort of like clouds of smoke and explosions going on. And then he's like, hurrah, riding to battle. And then his friend sort of slumps forward on the saddle and he's like, oh, what's going on? And he's like, oh, he's been shot. Fuck, he's been shot. And then he sort of realizes that he's in the middle of a battle. I mean, it's absolute chaos. It's written from his point of view. You don't understand. You know, there's no sense of what's going on. There's no sense of coherence. It's very, very individual. Very, very human writing about just this sort of chaos and madness and him being the mixture of his and kind of incredible. He's very young. He's very excited. He's very kind of, you know, huzzah, I'm off to battle. And then the mix of that and the realization of the reality battle is, and the fact that it is incredibly confusing, there's no overall narrative, it's absolutely wonderful. I mean, that so War and Peace and Tolstoy's Sevastopol Sketches are the books I just come back to again and again, even though I actually write stuff which is essentially kind of classical, even Bronze Age battles. What the things that influence my battle scenes are the Iliad. They're based on the Iliad, drawn on the Iliad and Alexander, the campaigns of Alexander. But what I come back to again and again and again when I'm writing battle scenes is the battle scenes of War and Peace and the Sevastopol sketches, which is Tolstoy writing about. He was writing the journalistic sketches from the Siege of Sevastopol during the Crimean War, and I just come back to them again and again because he's just. I mean, obviously, you know, when he was there in Sevastopol, he's writing about stuff he's seeing, but it's just, you know, the way he writes about human life in war, and it's just, they're just incredible. That's incredible, incredible sort of scenes.
Excellent. Thank you. And Nick, for you, favorite battle scene?
I think my favorite battle scene, at least I can think about, it might be A Knight's Tale, like the final battle in the Knight's Tale movie. It's kind of like, you know, the stereotypical two jousting people going after it. But it's kind of like really cool. Like it's the big culmination of all these like things throughout the movie, but they've already kind of already been solved. Like the main character has already gotten his goal. He's already got the love interest. And there's this brief moment where he like takes off his armor to just hold, you know, the joust in his hand where you're like, could this turn into a tragedy? And then, you know, the battle happens and he wins and stuff. And it's just a compilation of all these things. Like it could have gone wrong, but he got to live his dreams. He changed fate. And it's, you know, the type of system they were in back then where peasants didn't really get to rise up and he became this knight and rewrote the stars. I really like that. You know, it may be cliche. Like, I don't know if the movie, everyone likes it, but I absolutely adore that movie, and that fight scene like seals it for me, especially when all his friends are taunting the villain, like standing over them being like, you messed up, dude, you lost. That's one of my favorite ones.
Excellent. And Andrea?
Okay, so anytime somebody asks me my favorite blank from a book or even favorite book, I kind of just blank out. I'll just go with an example that from a book that I read more recently that I really enjoyed, which is The Jasmine Throne by Tasha Suri. There's a battle near the end, and you kind of jump around from point of view to point of view. And there is actually like a point of view of somebody that dies during the battle. And you kind of get to see like how random it is and how chaotic it is. And I think that it was just done really, really well. I really enjoyed that scene.
Excellent, thank you. And RJ, if you could close us out on this question.
I see, Nick's messed me up by bringing films into this. I was all decided. I was like, yeah, I know what I'm going to choose here. And then Nick brought films in. And so I'm going to briefly mention the final battle in The Seven Samurai by Akira Kurosawa, because that's terrifying. That is just the most amazing on-screen bit of fighting I've ever seen. But as to fights that influenced me in the way I think, there's a book called L.A. Requiem by the crime writer Robert Crace, and the book's written in different points of view, all first person. And as he goes through the book towards this final battle that it builds up to, which is a fight, it's a couple of men on a couple of men, the points of view get shorter. So by the time you're in the book, you're kind of like getting blur from different points of view. And it just blew my mind when I read it. I was just, oh my God, about things you can do with narrative that I just never thought about. And it's my favorite for that reason, because it made me think different. Not that I've ever used it, because I'm too scared. It looked hard.
All right, thank you. And hopefully that's all those suggestions inspire people to go out and check out some of these films and or books. For the next question, I think this one's largely for me, so I can totally steal what you guys know. What, if anything, have you learned about writing battle scenes that helps you the most? Okay, we'll start with Andrea.
Okay, this is a good one, because I learned this when I was writing The Bone Short Emperor, my second book, where there's a climactic battle scene. And I sent it off to my editor, which I knew, you know, was a polish at that point. And he was like, I don't know, like, what is happening here. Like, it's just, well, I don't know where people are. So one of the things that I learned from that is actually, like, drawing a map of the battle scene, like where people are located, what the topography is like, which direction everyone is going and when. It kind of gets you like a better idea of blocking, like just where the different forces are at certain times. So that helped me write a better scene after that.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. As a quick follow-up question to that, did you feel like you knew where everyone was and it just, you needed that extra nudge in order to sort of describe it more so that your editor could see it too?
I think in my head, I would kind of like see it like a movie, you know? Mm-hmm. Oh, this is what's happening over here and this is what's happening over here. But I didn't describe it clearly enough. And I feel like drawing out like this is what the landscape looks like and this is where people are moving helped me describe better what exactly was going on the page.
Excellent, thank you. Making lots of mental notes here. Okay, and Nick, if you could give us your version of the, what do you think of this?
Yeah, I think the thing that most helped me learn how to write battles is I used to do a lot of races and swimming, and I realized when you're exerting yourself, like you obviously take a lot of breaths. So I started writing the scenes like that at the beginning of fights. I'd have very long, more flowery prose, like longer sentences. And as they got more winded, I would cut down on the flowery stuff, take out the purple, make it so it's kind of just like bare bones. And then when the climactic part of the fight starts, it's like 2-3 sentences words, like split lips, bruised knuckles, like really make the reader like have to pause and breathe all these times when they see all these periods. To kind of put them in that moment where like you can't run away from the fight, like I'm going to try to control your breathing while you're reading this book. And then once the battle's over, it returns to the more normal prose. So that's kind of what I would suggest.
Oh, very cool. Okay. Miles.
Yeah, I'm afraid I'm going to give a long answer, so I'll try and keep this short. I'm a huge reenactor, and I do a certain amount of fighting, and I'm also a military veteran. And so the experience, and I'm going to talk about experience, that I have found most profound is commanding. and especially commanding fake battles where there's no blood on the line, and yet there's a lot of adrenaline, and especially commanding on horseback. So I want to go to what Anna said about Tolstoy, because I also love those battle scenes in War and Peace, and say, very often we put our characters on horseback, and I want to say some things because I feel like it's one of the most profound experiences I've ever had in terms of writing battle scenes. And I want to specify that I was on a magnificent horse, by which I mean the horse that Harrison Ford rode as Indiana Jones in Temple of Doom, a beautifully trained Hollywood theater horse that is so much better than my riding quality. But the horse took itself out of the equation by being perfect. So it's just my experience of being on top of that horse. Being 6 foot higher than the battle gives you an incredible feeling of power. It also gives you an incredible line of sight that when you're down in it, especially when you're in armor, you really have very little idea what's going on. And just that sort of elevation in a battle was sort of an almost magical experience. And then I want to toss on top of that, that hornets stung my magnificent horse and it ran off on me, depriving my entire side of command and control for a little while. And that, I mean, it sounds like a funny story. It's funny now, but there's so much going on there between you and the mount. And if any of you ride or have had that experience, it was really profound. And I'm just going to end by saying, it also taught me that I had taken for granted a lot of command and control, like that in that chaos that Anna, that really all of us sort of mentioned in a way, that you're in the pre-modern period or the fantasy period, you're struggling to get a little control, and the horse can both help and hurt that. I don't know. That was my profound command experience.
Love it. Thank you. And RJ, over to you.
I'm just so impressed that Miles managed to name drop a horse. That's amazing. I know Miles has written a lot of ships. I don't know if he'd agree with me or not, but my first advice is don't write ships. It's really hard. you've not only got to remember where everybody is and which ship they're on and what each ship's name is. You've got to remember where the ships are, what side's facing the other side, how fast they're moving. It's everything in a normal battle and then again. And so many times I regretted doing ships when I was writing the board ships. I mean, I love doing it, but also it's really hard. But more than that, fight scenes for me are about terror. And I think that's what I'm always trying to get across, that it's not fun and it's not cool and it's not an enjoyable experience. It's an extreme of human experience. And battle is chaos, and that's what fascinates me, and the things that people do when they're stuck into extreme situations. So that's always what I'm trying to get through when I'm writing battle scenes. I'm not trying to make you go, whoa, cool. I'm trying to make you go, shit, I don't want that. No, get me away.
Oh, thank you. And Anna?
Yeah, so, I mean, so practically for writing battles, I guess... Actually, what I do a lot is, I mean, I watch an awful lot of films and television programs with battles in them. I watch, and actually analysing battle scenes in films that really do something for you. I mean, so part of where I write battles, I'm writing them to write them exciting. You know, you're trying to get that real sense of adrenaline and power and, yes, fear and horror, but also incredible excitement. So I will analyse battle scenes again and again. I've watched the scene, the Battle of Helm's Deep in the Jackson, the Towers, which, I mean, I could probably watch that battle every day for a couple of years and never get bored. But, you know, I've watched that scene and analysed that scene so many times in terms of, you know, how it's laid out, what's going on, how the sound's working, how the light's working, the sort of little cuts, you know, the kind of bits between the bits that are really quite horribly sort of, you know, poetic, and sort of there's Theoden's amazing speech, but how did it come to this? There's that hideous sort of scene with, you know, the orc in charge with the arc light behind him, the lighting behind him. But then there's the sort of comedy bit with Gimli and the where you get the sort of pan along all the soldiers, and then there's Gimli and you can't see him because he's too low. And then there's that bit where there's that silence, and then just one sort of bit of wood just drops and you get this creaking noise of the wood and silence again. I've analysed that scene over and over and over again. Similarly, there's an amazing television series called 1864, which is about the Second Danish-Prussian War, which actually in terms of film, television battles, the battle in that, it's an amazing, huge bombardment by the Prussian army of the Danish army had dug in. And that's probably, visually, that's the most amazing battle scene I think I've ever seen. I've analysed that so many times in my head. And just, you know, what's going on? What is the, and it's film, but it's, you know, it's visual, it's not a book, but it's what are they doing here? How is this, how are all the elements of sound and character emotions versus the kind of, you know, the big picture and the sound and the light and those details, the tonal shifts between Theodin's speech and the little comedy bit with Gimli. How is all that silence, the noise, how is all that working? And how can I try and put all of that into writing? And I'll do that. Like, I mean, the big battle at the end of Return of the Jedi, you get that amazing, you know, the amazing split battle. You have the space battle, you have the battle on Endor, and you have the battle on the Death Star. And again, you know, how is that working? What's going on there? And trying to kind of, and how do I feel? How do I feel? What is this doing to me? And trying to put that into words. It's actually rather, Nick was saying about the breathing, you know, that kind of sense of my breathing is, you know, I'm getting really excited. My breathing's really going. I'm getting really excited. I'm going to write this really fast. And then I'm going to pull back. And we're going to have a moment of quiet. I'm going to have a moment of pause. And then we're going to have something. Then we might, then, you know, that, and getting all of that. And just sort of, so yeah, so I do a lot of analytical work on, actually on films and television would be something, take scenes that you really enjoy in films and in books and really try and break down what they're doing and then try and not copy it, don't write the Battle of Helm's Deep, but put your own characters in terms of what's the lighting, what's the, how would I do a battle, how would I do a similar, how would I do that in my own work, I guess.
Thank you. And actually, that leads kind of into my next question really well. And I'm going to start with you again, Anna, if you don't mind, because you were sort of really touching on this topic. When all of you are writing battle scenes or fight scenes in your own work, what lets you know that the what you're writing is working? What tells you that it's working? And Anna?
Oh, God, when I'm hitting the table, going like, fuck yeah. I'm wanting to run around the room. When it's not working, I'm really depressed and really down, and it's like that with everything. But when I'm writing a really good battle scene, it is probably the most exciting moments of my life. And actually, going back to a big bit of advice, I was scared for years when I first started writing The Court of Broken Knives, which was the first piece of fiction I ever wrote as an adult. I was skittering around writing a battle scene for a long time because I had this, so I have various hidden disabilities. I'm very physically maladept. I could not be a good reenactment. I do a lot of writing fighting scenes and people say, oh, you know, you need to be a reenactor. Everyone else there was like, oh, I'm a reenactor. I'm a martial artist. I'm a, you know, black belt in karate. I've done all this stuff. And I'm like, yeah, I'm totally coordinated. I regularly don't even know which hand I hold a fork in, let alone, you know, if someone gave me a sword, I'd cut my own foot off. And I was really scared of writing a battle for ages because I was like, you know, how can I write this? It's going to be wrong. I've read loads of stuff and I've watched loads of films, but, you know, I don't know what it's like. I don't know what it feels like. I don't really have any knowledge of how my own body feels, let alone how it feels killing someone. And then I just let rip. And that first time I first wrote a battle scene was possibly one of the most amazing nights of my life. And I just know when it's a good battle scene, I do feel it like I'm there. I can really feel it. I like, you know, it is really that mixture of, I'm running around the room like roaring and then getting back to writing again and banging the table. And I just know.
Excellent, thank you. And Nick, for you, what, when you're doing your own work, what tells you that the fight or the battle scene is working?
I was trying to think of this the entire time where I think Anna was right. Like, I think you just know. Like, I can read a scene and be like, this is terrible because it's not making me want to keep reading it. It's almost like, I don't know about you guys, but like some of these fight scenes I have to read like, it seems like 100 times. And if I still want to read it, by the time it gets to the 100th time, I know I've got it right. But if I don't, then I'm like, oh oh no, this is terrible. I got to do fix something here. Maybe it's dialogue or like voice work or character emotions, or I haven't set something up properly. You just kind of know. I don't know. That's the worst advice ever, but it's just like, it's like a feeling. Like, I don't, like, it's just like something's like, yes, this is working. No, something's not working.
It's confidence. It's having that confidence to not be like, oh shit, someone's going to hold me up. There is always someone who's going to hold you up and say, he's not holding your sword right. Or, you know, they couldn't have held the arrow on that string for that long. Or, you know, oh, technically that wouldn't have been done. They wouldn't have done it like that. Long, you know, if you feel like, yeah, this is going. That confidence that you've got will carry you through it, because yeah, you're not having that, oh, I'm going to try and like qualify this or justify this or get nervous. You're just, when you're going for it, the reader can see that.
Yeah, sorry, I mean, 100%. I think I am going to ask Miles next time if I have any course questions. Like, he's been on that horse. Like, I 100% know the source of where I'm going to now.
Excellent, thanks. I'm going to hop to RJ for the same question, please.
I'm the opposite. I almost never know. I'm always reading things back, and my mind is in edit mode, and I'm always chasing a writer that is over the hill and better than me. And I always think I can get there, and that's how I feel. But when I was editing the Bone Ships, there's a 3-on-3 ship battle towards the end, and I was going through my edits, and then I realized that I was holding my breath. And I thought, all right, that works. And that's probably the only time I've ever been like, yeah, I'm happy with that, and I'm not going to touch it. Apart from that, no, I never know. I just always think I can make it a bit better. Or it's not. It's a bit, and a battle's like a journey, so I'm more interested in the what it's doing with the narrative and the actual battle itself. I hate writing them. They're really difficult, and it's I slow down. I write everything else really quickly. But that one time, but holding my breath, that was quite fun. I was like, wait, done it.
Excellent. And Andrea, over to you.
Sure. I just want to kind of follow on what RJ said about the narrative being more important. So I kind of work in a weird way where I can't write the battle scene until the rest of the book feels right, because to me it's like the emotional stakes have to be lined up before I feel like I can write the big battle, if that makes any sense. So I always know that it's working when I feel like those emotional stakes are lining up with the physical stakes of the battle. And it kind of just like plays out like a movie in my head, and it's a movie that I'm enjoying. I work kind of weird like that, where I revise everything before I get to the big battle.
Okay, thank you. And Miles, if you could close us out on this question.
It's a great question. And I'm still kind of considering my answer, but I guess I'll say this much. I too think I know when I get there. I guess what I want to say is there's a lot of different kinds of battle scenes, but so I use them for different purposes. So not all of my battle scenes give me the rush that I definitely recognize when Anna speaks of it. And I love those. I love it when I can put out 8,000 words because I never stop being in that moment and my fingers are tense, and then I read it later and I admit I kind of like my own writing. I read it later and it's tense, but that's not the only kind of battle scene I write, and sometimes the purpose of a battle scene is very different. So I kind of want to echo what Andrea said. If I was writing romance, the battle scene would be the passionate kiss that decides the relationship, but you don't get to just walk to there, you have to get there. And it's not just the characters, it's also the events. I like best in other people's writings when the battle happens for a reason. And sometimes the best battles are for the worst reasons, where you go, oh no, 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 no. And that, you know, and the heroes sort of collapse into a desperate combat because all of the other things went wrong. But I'm gonna go along with the feeling. I can feel at the end of a scene, usually where I've failed to put enough tension in because I'm not tense. And I know the feeling literally when my fingers are tense typing that I'm tense. Oh, and by the way, I do this thing, which I actually recommend. I will, without hesitation, kill a major character in a battle that I did not plan to kill. And that adds tension for me. And I hope it adds tension for the reader. And it's something that I'm just going to like shout this out. I've done it since my first historical fiction novel. And I do it to shock the reader about what war is. War kills even your favorites. War is not fair or nice. So I want to just go, and I don't give them long heroic death scenes. They're just dead. And they're dead in your peripheral vision. I killed a much beloved young woman in the Red Knight series in a sentence and got more hate mail about that one sentence. I think than fan mail, simply because people loved Nell and suddenly Nell was dead for no reason, didn't advance the plot, didn't accomplish anything. The world is terrible and war is bad. And I never, ever want to have people come out of a fight scene going like, wow, isn't war glorious?
Something Miles does that I'm going to steal, because I've been reading his Greek books and they're fabulous. It's in his fight scenes, it feels to me like it slowly closes in on the main character until he's in this little cocoon of terrifying violence. And it's, I'm so jealous. I'm nicking it off you, Miles, sorry. But it's really good, really clever. It makes me really tense when I'm reading it. I'm just like, oh.
Can I just insert some praise for RJ Barker? I loved your naval books, and I want to echo what you said about never writing a ship fight. And the first time I wrote a ship fight in one of those Greek novels, my editor sent it back and pointed out that I had every direction, east, west, north, south, backwards. Every single one backwards, and I had to rewrite the whole scene. And since then, I have used maps, like someone else was saying, and sometimes maps with little ships moving on the maps, because I am apparently directionally dyslexic.
So I have a naval battle in The Town of Undying, and that was a real challenge to write, because that was I've never been in a battle, but I've definitely never been in a naval battle. But that was meant to be. It was written from the point of the person watching it, who's aware that it's a very chaotic. It was meant to be a very chaotic battle, and that was just so much fun, because it was just this kind of. I mean, I just able to completely let rip. It was like, okay, let's have Greek fire and like, you know, then we'll get some, and just kind of, you know, just totally. So it's just, that was really fun. I found that was absolutely amazingly fun, because it was just absolute chaos and just kind of, it was a very chaotic battle, was the kind of point. It was a disaster. It was a naval disaster battle, basically. But it was just, oh God, it was a brilliant fun, right? Writing about people being stuck on something that you can't swim, and you're stuck on a bit of wood that's on fire, plus there's someone coming out with a sword. I mean, how can that not be fun?
Excellent. As a quick follow-up, because I'm now curious and I'm going to reveal my ignorance, if you're on a ship, are you saying, Miles, that the directions are somewhat different or whatever, or is it just that in relation to where the other ships were and where land was, you were mixing up your north, south, east, west?
So as a veteran naval officer, I will tell you that you do both directions as relative, like port and starboard, but you by the way, you notice I motioned my right hand and said port, and therein lies the problem. So you do port and starboard, which are relative to your ship, but east, west, north, and south never change. And apparently I just shouldn't be trusted with a map.
Fair enough. All right. And I'm going to hop to... Oh, go ahead, please.
Sorry, I just wanted to shout out to Paul, because I can see him there and say, Paul, here's your book.
Wow.
it's the next and, to be read. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
No worries. And hey, Paul, and welcome. So next question is that some readers talk about skipping or skimming fight battle scenes. They say, I just jump to the end to see who won and then keep reading. Now, you can never please everyone, but what, if anything, about fight or battle scenes might be prompting such a reaction from such readers? And if we could start with RJ.
It's that they're wrong. That's what's prompting the reaction. it's, If you're doing your book right, then a battle is not about people hitting each other with swords. It's about the emotion of it and what the people involved in that battle, why they're there, and what they are. I hate using the word learning because that leads to journey, and that's like, we don't want to say that they're on a journey, but that's what the fight is. It's just like Miles said, it's the pinch point. It's like it's the first kiss in a romance. It's that, and if you read all the lead up to it and then you just read the aftermath, you miss the emotion of the middle of it. It's and it didn't work. I mean, read the book however you want, as long as you've paid for it, I don't care. Skip whatever you fancy. but I would say you are, especially if you're reading something like Ira, which is kind of like epic fantasy, which is military based, you're kind of missing the point of it. Because you learn about these people in these moments of extreme stress, and that's what a battle is. It's not for me actually about weapons and killing. It is the extreme stress moment and what you learn in it. Like there's one in the Bone Ships where I try not to be spoilery, a character doesn't, an act of extreme heroics that doesn't seem like that much, but because you know about their history, it makes it something bigger. And that's the way you use a battle. That's what those moments are. And that's why you shouldn't skip it. But as I said, as long as you paid for it, you just skip it all if you want. Just read the last page. It's fine. I'm cool with that. But buy the next two as well.
Definitely. Thank you. And Nick?
I think I almost want to double down on that's the wrong way to read it, but at the same time, I respect RJ's, like, just buy the book, read it however you want. But I agree with him. It's the moments of extreme stress. Like, in a lot of fantasy novels, those are fights, those are magic scenes. Mm-hmm. In real life, they can be, like, sports or just, like, interacting with someone who's terrible and not, like, losing your mind. Like, these moments of high stress. So when you skip those parts, it's kind of like, you're missing a lot of the character growth that you can experience in a lot of these scenes, even if you don't like the violent aspects of them. So I guess, yeah, I guess it would be really interesting. I'm going to try that with someone's book, just read everything except the fight scenes and see if I understand what happens. I feel like I'll come out and be like, when did this person die? And it's like, oh, in the first battle. Oops. but yeah, buy the book, read it however you want. Just do that.
Miles mentioned Patrick O'Brien, and Patrick O'Brien's really bad habit of killing characters off between books and just not telling you. And you realize halfway through a book, it drives me mental. I love him, but it drives me mental.
Okay, so you know what? Then let's jump to Miles. What do you think about this?
Yeah, so first I have to admit that I had this experience quite recently, and I almost skipped a fight scene. Brilliant novel by Alistair Reynolds, science fiction, and he had telegraphed that in this scene, all of the protagonists are going to die and it's going to be horrible. And I sucked it up and read it, but I actually looked up for a minute and sort of sucked in my breath. And I just knew that characters I cared about were about to go down and, you know, super important to the plot. But I could have skipped the end of that because I felt like I knew where we were going and I wasn't wrong. It was horrible. So having said that, I did read it. And I feel like repeating something my dad taught me, which is that fight scenes, and I mean not just big battles, but a duel or a gunfight or whatever, they're like sex scenes. If they don't move the plot and the character, why are you writing them? And that means that from the reader's standpoint, if they're moving plot and character, you better read them. I guess I'm just repeating what both Nick and RJ said, but. Like, then I'll just mock myself and say, with most of my books, if you cut all the fight scenes, I'm not sure there'd be that many words left.
Fair enough. And over to you, Anna.
Oh, God, yeah. And I mean, yeah, so I will sometimes skip some of the dialogue to get to the fight scene. So, yeah, you know, the bit where people are like, oh, I don't want to do this. but he was my father. I kind of, you know, I can't do this. Give me the courage to do this. And it's like, no, you can do this. I will skip all those bits and just get to that. Like, I just want to get to the fight scenes. And but yeah, I mean, when people sort of say they skip bits of a book, it's a bit like when people skip the prologue or things, you're like, they're there for a reason. I mean, fine, skip it, you know, but don't be surprised if the book then seems slightly puzzling to you in places. Rather, you know, like if you only read book two of a trilogy, don't be surprised that you're not quite sure how it begins or it ends. Like, I mean, I have a slightly different. I know people have. Someone famously tweeted the world that they had taken my book back to all the way back to the bookshop when they read the first page, which begins with this kind of just battle scene, which is completely chaotic. You have no idea what's going on. You have no idea who the character is, and you just ends with the character dying, and it is just completely chaotic. And I completely understand why some people read that opening but page and just think, this is not for me. And that it was the opening chapter is not there to make you think on page one, okay, this book is not for me, rather than to get to page 20 and think, this book is not for me. But it is a kind of statement that there is stuff in, you know, this, if you're not into that kind of chaotic stream of consciousness poetic battle scene, this book frankly probably isn't for you. And because for me, and actually for me, writing battles, I don't think it is just about character, and I don't think it is just about character and plot development. For me, partly it is just the sheer language, the thrill of reading and writing language, articulating something which is taking you to the limits of human experience. To write and to read something which is taking you to that point where you are experiencing killing and death, and you're experiencing either the terror and the horror and the pity of war, or you're experiencing the astonishing total physical sexual thrill of killing. And to take you to use human language, to use language to take you to that point where you're experiencing that, and to put that into words or to read that in words. For me, that in itself is just a profound thing to be able to feel. There are some battle scenes I feel that I've written, including the first chapter of Court Recognize, that I do feel incredibly proud of. That I feel that I stretched what I was writing. I stretched my ability as a writer absolutely to the limit. And they don't. They are gratuitous in the sense that they're not particularly moving the plot on. They're not about the characters or the about. They're about making you feel and experience emotion and language. And my completely made up understanding what that kind of extreme limit of human, a limit of absolute human behavior, absolutely on the limit is. So for me, yeah, if you don't want to read that, don't read the battle scene. Similarly, you know, if you don't, but then there's a sense of, you know, that I guess the kind of books I read and write, it's kind of be like reading a pornographic novel. I'm not reading the porn, like, you know, what kind of, you know, what's the point? But I can, you know, there are other novels sort of where the battles are more incidental, or yeah, I can see you might, if you're that kind of way, you might skip it. I've skipped bits of prose, I've skipped the occasional, the kind of love scene where you know they're going to end up together. I've skipped over that because it's not, I don't, it's how you want to read a book. But yeah, there's not much point reading a piece of military fantasy if you're going to skip the military fantasy, as far as I can see.
Excellent. Yeah, thanks. And no, I also definitely appreciate the fact that you're talking about writing the battle scenes from that different perspective, which is that it's about the language and what the language does to you, and trying to get that emotion. And it does, without necessarily, on occasion, having to try to forward character plot, like, and seeing what that does to you as a reader and you as a writer. That's interesting.
It's like landscape description. Yeah, I love writing big, long landscape descriptions for some reason. Mm. It's just good to write.
Mm. And Andrea, to you last for this question.
Well, I don't have much to add. I mean, I'll say that I kind of get it, because when I was a kid, I used to go to Disneyland and then I'd get on the Mr. Toad's Wild Ride, and I'd always close my eyes at the point where the train is coming at you. But then I'd always like feel like I was missing something. So if you're the type of reader who's just like, well, there's too much tension here and I can't take it and I just want to skip to the end and see what happens. Like, I get it. But at the same time, you're probably missing out.
Love that, and love the example, because I can understand that very clearly, like that feeling. Maybe not on the Mr. Toes ride, but I do.
I get that. You know it's going to be okay. The train's not going to hit you. But yet.
Okay, I guess the next question then is, once we discount breaking the internal logic of our stories to the extent that it would violate a reader's ability to suspend disbelief, how important is realism to you when writing fighting or battle scenes? And what makes the level of realism that you aim for preferable? Nick.
Oh, okay. So my thing is, I kind of take two things into writing scenes. I'm not going to be the most knowledgeable on like swords things, and that it's just, I'd have to do hundreds of years of research to get to a point where I know everything. But I followed kind of two points where I know how endurance works really well. So I know when my character's going to get tired and how much they can take. And two, fights are always brutal and they always last quicker than you think they're going to last, because like it's the famous saying, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face. So to me, that was something I wanted to put in my own writing, which these fights will last, they will happen, they'll last, but you know, if you get stabbed in the sword and you're in back in more of like the medieval ages, that can kill you, like just straight out. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to reflect that in my own writing, where you know, a gunshot, a stab wound, like these things can and will kill you and they'll take you out. So I wanted to reflect that, like almost brutality. It's like, it's not a fun thing. Like, don't get me wrong, I love like lightsabers and Jedis and dueling and those like more video game fight styles. But at the same time, like Jedis, like you're done. Like you lose your hand in an instant. So I always kind of want to make sure that's always shown. Like you can have the high fantasy, but it can go bad so quickly.
Excellent, thank you. And RJ, over to you.
I'm a fully paid up member of the Make Shit Up Club. I'm lucky in that I'm interested in history, so I've read a lot. So there's probably stuff floating around in the back of my mind that keeps it at a level just above stupid. And I'm interested in all this stuff, so that's there. But I'm never gonna not let myself do something just because I know it wouldn't work. My favorite email I've ever had about my work was about the Bone Ships, and it said, I've just finished this trilogy and I'm a professional sailor and I need to tell you that you've got ships wrong. Which I knew, there's an apology in the back of the first book if you're interested in ships, because I knew I didn't know enough about tall ships. It's incredibly complicated. But then it followed up with, but you've got how ships feel absolutely right. And he just said that he forgot. And that's what I'm always striving for. I want to make it feel real. And I write my battle, I think, in such a way that you're more in with the person than dealing with actual detail. So there's a bit of hand waviness going on. But I'm a great believer in get enough small things right, then you can sell a lot of rubbish later down the line. And people will buy it because you've got their trust by then. As long as like you're not milking a stallion and stuff like that, you're probably all right.
Fair enough. Thank you. And Andrea?
Yeah, I'm fully in RJ's club. I just, you know, live off the vibes.
That sounds much better than Makes It Up Club. I'm renaming it Live Off the Vibes Club.
That's what it is. Well, you know, I'm over here with like, hey, it's magic. But, you know, if something feels like it might be too far-fetched for me, or if I feel like, hey, like I don't know this historical detail, I will stop and go and look something up to make sure I'm not getting like too far off the beaten path. But I mean, to me, it is mostly like, how does it feel? Does it feel right? I have not had anybody call me out on it yet, but I, you know, they probably would be very justified in doing so.
Fair enough. And Miles, over to you.
I hope I'm about to surprise you all by saying that I don't really think that authenticity or realism are all that vital for fight scenes. I don't. Pretty much for the reasons RJ has already stated. So I'm just going to say, first of all, that like anyone who participates at a high level in martial arts knows that martial arts are all simulations. They are not real. And they are not the same thing as being in a fight. And then the second thing I want to say is, I think after my second or third Greek novel, I got this piece of fan mail, and I'm sort of echoing RJ, and the fan mail was from a SAS officer in England's famous Special Air Service, a black operations unit in the UK, in case you don't know the SAS. And he basically said, like, I've killed a bunch of people, and I want you to know that when you're killing people, you do not remember the techniques you use. None of this first-person memory of being in desperate combat, it comes to you. You basically operate in the black, and here are four books that you should read on the state of mind of the warrior in the moment of personal combat. So I read all those books, and what I discovered was that the way, I'm going to go back to Patrick O'Brien, the way Patrick O'Brien sometimes has a character say, and then I was standing there with a broken sword in my hand and my empty pistol, and there was blood on the deck, apparently is the best way to write a fight scene. And at that point, I like getting into the details of maybe the sword or the way the sword works, because it's a style, and because I can use that, in fact, to talk about character and to maybe move the plot along or to detail some aspect of world building. But other than that, I honestly am not sure that knowing, and I'm not positive that I know exactly how it works, is that profound. There are things that matter to me. I'm going to absolutely echo Nick. I've been in some fights. You take a punch, the whole fight is different. And also, one of the things that I know that I try to reflect, and I didn't used to know this, by the way, so I've changed the way I write certain fight scenes, is that if one person is much better than the other, it's not a fight, it's murder. And as a pretty high-level practitioner of some sword arts, the beginner has no chance at all. Zero chance. You just walk up and kill it. And that's why a champion épée fencer can go through their first three or four pools without even being hit in a tournament, because there's that much difference. And I do try and keep that in mind, but that then talks about character. And I don't mean to like go on and on, but what kind of person willingly kills the farm boy, you know, in that unfair battle between the veteran? It almost has to be the villain, because it's not a nice person who's like, hey, kid, come and fight me because I will definitely bind your sword and kill you in the first half. And so that's a game, but it's more of a character game than a quote knowledge of how fighting works. Anyway, I hope I've shocked you all to the core, because what I'm basically saying is knowing how it works may not be that important.
I am a little shocked, to be honest, but okay. But loved the answer, so thank you. And Anna, over to you.
Yeah, I mean, no one can know. Obviously, you can know, kind of, you can understanding of things. If you're writing a novel set in influenced by a particular period, you know, if you're writing a medieval novel, obviously, if you're writing a sort of high medieval period or ancient Greece or, yeah, sort of tall ships period, obviously there are kind of basic things you need to get right about the kind of types of weapons that people are using and the kind of possibly logistics, that kind of stuff. But beyond that, I mean, no one can know. How can anyone know what it would be like to be in a pre-modern battle situation? You know, even someone who's been in the modern military cannot know what that kind of pre-modern experience of warfare is like. And very, very few of us have actually been involved in hand-to-hand combat to the death. I would be very surprised if any watching this from the audience have been in. Now, you can't know. What you can know is a kind of basic kind of sense of the types of weapons and armor and sort of fighting techniques that would work within the kind of conceptual milieu that you're writing in. So all of our books are set in very different culture periods, and obviously there are different kind of weapon styles and armor styles and sort of start approaches to fighting that would be right or wrong. But beyond that, again, it's that confidence of I'm writing this and I believe it. If you believe it to yourself, then you can usually carry it. You can often tell when you're writing a book, it's the point where someone has this like, shit, I don't know how my economy works, or yeek, I don't quite know how I'm going to get this fight scene to work. And you can tell where they're having that point where they're almost kind of apologetic. You can, if you've got the confidence to just skate over it and do it and make it sound convincing, it probably will be. I mean, this is fiction. And also this is fantasy fiction. You're writing for people's enjoyment. There are tropes that people enjoy, which are, you know, you often do these kind of writing fighting panels and someone will say, well, it's not realistic. And the classic one is, of course, the kind of the head injury where the character passes out for half an hour and comes round. I've been told so many times that's completely unrealistic. Yeah, it's completely unrealistic, but it's a really great trope in a novel. It's that, it's the classic scene ending or chapter ending. And then he comes around in the next chapter, half an hour's gone, the girl's disappeared, the battle won or lost. You've got no idea what's going on. And he's got to pick himself up and sort of carry on from there and try and piece together what's happened. It's just such a classic trope. And it's a way of creating, it immediately creates excitement and suspense and gives you that kind of moment when you've got to kind of, why would you not use that? It's, there are tropes within the writing of fantasy and within historical fiction. As Miles was saying, there are strong tropes in historical fiction with that the technical stuff about the weapons and the technique and the very technical stuff, which is a real classic trope of historical fiction. And a lot of people read historical fiction partly to get that enjoyment and interest out of that kind of, almost that kind of educational kind of sense of, okay, now I have some sense of how of a Roman legionary's kit and a Roman legionary's drilling maneuvers and things. Or if someone says, well, it's not realistic because, the realistic fight scene would be simply, and then I came round in a pool of blood with a sword. You're not, but the trope is to write that stuff because people who read this stuff want to get those tropes and want to have that sense of this is how it's working. So it's that kind of, that's about realism per se. It's about having the conviction to carry it off in such a way that you feel it's convincing. You can convince yourself and someone else that the battle has been won or lost, or your hero has done whatever, in a way that you can convince yourself that it's worked and that you can convince a couple of beta readers that it works. Someone is always going to pull things apart because someone always does. But it's not about that. It's about, if you're enjoying it and your readers are enjoying it, that in the end, that's all that matters. It's kind of, that's all that really matters. I would really, the idea that someone is kind of, stuff that's obviously completely, someone suddenly producing a gun in a medieval fantasy would just destroy it. But within the structures of you're writing within, particularly within fantasy, you're writing within a trope which has its own logic, which isn't the logic of realism. It's the kind of logic of the genre that you're writing it. Someone would always pick that apart, but if they if you just have the confidence to do it, just feel confident in what you're doing, basically.
So I'm kind of hearing that we're all part of RJ's club, is that like
it sounds like.
I'll do badges, I'll get your badges.
What I have to say I do actually do for big battles is I often will try, I do all my big battles are based on real battles. So that kind of, things like, trying to work out the mechanics of the big battle about how do we win? We are, we are a small group of people against a massive army. How are we going to win? I will find a real battle where a very small group of people won against a much bigger army. So you have some kind of, okay, this is realistically plausible rather than kind of, we somehow encircled them with our five people. That kind of something that kind of, it works because it worked. So it has a conviction, but only because I'm like, okay, so this worked because Alexander did it. So clearly, it worked once. So if I write it, I have some conviction it's going to work rather than kind of that kind of the classic, well, how do we get around this? I've got written myself into an impossible position where there's now two people versus an army. How do I get around that? And kind of, so trying to do an example where something like that happened, someone defeated the impossible odds, just so you convince yourself, okay, it must have worked. So again, then you've got the confidence for, okay, well, this guy did it and I'm going to copy the way he did it. So yeah, and just put it into my own words.
Excellent. No, I very much like that, the idea of sort of looking through the real world examples that can justify what you're doing, which probably also lends you that confidence you're talking about to really write through it and know that, you know, you're convincing yourself, you'll convince others. Being the idea. Okay, we're nearing the end, but I do have a couple of more questions, and this one is one that's kind of important to me, and I'm curious to see the answers. Since I also write books with fighting and battles, there's something I keep wondering about or maybe struggling with, and so now I'll turn to you, my incredible panelists, to help me with it, or at least join me in the struggle. When asked how come there was so little killing in his films, filmmaker François Truffaut said, and I quote, "Some films claim to be anti-war, but I don't think I've ever really seen an anti-war film. Every film about war ends up being pro-war." He's also meant to have said, "To show something is to ennoble it." So, with that in mind, what do you think about Truffaut's position? And when we tell stories that heavily feature fights, battles, wars, are we likely to be telling pro-war stories? Andrea.
Okay, well, wow, that is a tough question. You know, I think it like partially depends on like what you believe and everything too. I mean, I know that there are people that have very strong pacifist beliefs and that there is nothing that justifies violence. I mean, looking at history, that sometimes violence is unfortunately the only way to get things done. I mean, I this sounds terrible, but I mean, depending on like who you're up against, if they don't have the same kind of hesitation, I just don't know that there is a way to get the desired outcome sometimes without some sort of violence. Just depending on the situation. I think we write these situations where people have tried other solutions. And, you know, somebody is coming up to them and attacking them. And at that point, like, what do you do except defend yourself? I mean, I could go on and on about how, you know, there's this tendency to say like, oh, well, don't do it that way. That's like too loud. That is we want you to have a voice, but we don't want you to have a voice that way, you know, kind of thing. So I do kind of, yes, I think that there is some merit to what he's saying, and that we write these things that show that as the solution to a problem. But yeah, I think it's a tough world out there, unfortunately. I wish that maybe that didn't need to be the case, but I think sometimes it is.
Excellent, thank you. And so over to Nick, to show something is to ennoble it. Are we likely writing pro-war stories?
I was really hoping I would not go next. I think on a basic level, I mean, yeah, like if we're kind of glorifying violence, like I think you kind of have to be, because it's, you're showing these characters who goes to these violent ends to kind of get what is done, needed to be done sometimes, and on a basic level that, you know, glorifies violence. And I kept thinking about like what you said, like the films. It was like All Quiet on the Western Front. Like that was kind of what I consider an anti-war movie, but at the same time, like it is glorifying war, like in the basic level. Like look at Hollywood and how many World War II films they put out like every year. And yes, there's stories of suffering and things, but on some basic level, they still glorify it. And even if I go to like Saving Private Ryan, that first scene on the when they're storming the beaches, I'm thinking, I don't want to, like, is this glorifying it or not? And I don't have an answer to that. So I think on some basic level, at least what I try to do as a writer is that, especially I write usually fairly young, dumb male characters who do resort to violence because they think that's what A, they have to do, and B, what society told them to do is how they can excel, is kind of go to violent ends. And they all come around at the end and be like, oh no, this is wrong. So I'm kind of, at least myself, I think, yeah, I am continuing that cycle of like glorifying violence, but I don't know kind of how to show how you get out of those cycles of violence without kind of showing the violence that starts it. That's a very rambling answer. I don't know if I actually didn't know yes or no, but I was really hoping I wasn't going next.
No, and I very much appreciate that, the idea that that you were talking about, how maybe you have sometimes, how do you show that you get out of a cycle, if it is indeed a cycle, without actually showing the cycle? So no, that's, I think, I personally find that very valuable. Anna, you're next.
Of course we're glorifying violence. I mean, of course we are. We kind of, I mean, Empires of Dust, you know, from the series title is kind of making a point that, you know, everything that is being done within these books is pointless. It is about, they are books about toxic masculine violence. There are books about people who are consumed by war, who glory in war and are shown to be nihilistic and destructive, people who are resisting war but you've shown that their lives are destroyed. It is about the emptiness and the horror of a toxic military culture. As I said, writing some of those battle scenes are some of the greatest thrills that I have ever experienced. I still read some of those battle scenes and think, like, my god damn, that's a good battle scene. Of course it is. It's that kind of, people often say, particularly about fantasy, well, what you're writing about is, you know, the fight scenes are there to show evil being defeated and the ultimate triumph of good, which is kind of fair enough, but that's an excuse, isn't it? Because, I mean, you don't need to write a 3-page fight scene to show that. We're all making different excuses for the fact we are writing scenes that involve violence, because it's damn exciting writing scenes that involve violence and reading scenes that involve violence, because the books are very exciting, because that's what makes, one of the things that makes books and films very exciting. There was that awful comment that someone made about when it was pointed out that Black Panther wasn't up for an Oscar, when someone was saying, oh, well, why? We're going to introduce an Oscar for blowing shit up next. Like, well, yeah, because that's what most, you know, that's what we get, a lot of people go and see films for, is to see shit blow up spectacularly. Beautiful people blowing things up spectacularly. The basis of modern cinema. So, yeah, of course we are. And we justify it with some kind of, yeah, but they're goodies making stuff blow up. They're goodies making the baddies blow up. Yeah, they're just making stuff blow up. You're not watching it. You're watching it to see the stuff blow up. Of course we are. Anything. I mean, even stuff like Das Boot, which is a kind of really searing, horrifying piece of cinema about submarine warfare, in fact, is, there are bits in that where you're like, my God, this is so exciting. And you feel kind of, it's, of course we are. We're kind of, and that, I mean, that's what I try and write about. I mean, in real life, I say to people, I am a pacifist feminist. And my position ultimately is that violence should never be justified. And then you obviously know the sort of resistance to Nazism, violence was forced on people. You have to say, well, yes, violence at that point was necessary. Simply, you know, one of the next books I'm going to read is about Toussaint Louverture and the Haitian slave revolt. And again, you know, that's a moment of experience which has to be justified. But the cultural context within that, you know, what is being done, the fact that this is a slave society that has got to that point where people, the only solution is to rise up violently, you know, that's the horror you justify. You don't say, oh, well, the violence was unjustified. You say, well, it was what, the tragedy is that people were forced into that position where they had to commit acts of violence, and acts of violence, yes, against some of the people they killed would have been innocent, in inverted commas. The slave owner's children would have been innocent, in inverted commas. This is, you know, a culture forces something to that point where something is so horrifying that the only way you can deal with it and resist it is to act with extreme violence. I mean, similarly, at the beginning of Das Boot, there's a very, very chilling little exchange where one of the German soldiers, one of the German officers is going off on in the submarine, has a French mistress. And he's very concerned about her because once he's gone, he says the French resistance will come and kill her. And of course, your immediate reaction to that was, well, she deserves it. You know, she's sleeping with a Nazi. But, and then you're like, well, hang on, she's just, you know, she's a woman. She met this guy. She found him sexually attractive. She's sleeping with him. And saying that, you know, and, you know, the fact that society has reached that point is an indictment of the entire of society. It's absolutely horrifying that we live in a world in which violence has to be necessary in some cases, in which you have to reach that point, in which the kind of justified anger reaches that point, or the need to resist reaches that point. It's horrifying we live in a society where we do hugely fetishize violence, and it's horrifying that we are what we are, that we do seem to find violence enjoyable. And the really horrifying point is when you point out that even people with the most, you know, the most completely justified reason to be involved in battle, in a purely defensive capability involved in battle, are probably still at one level finding it a massive turn on to kill people. And it's that articulating all of that we are deeply, deeply imperfect beings. We are going to look at chimpanzees, for God's sake. They rape, they murder. And yeah, of course we are. That's all we can do is admit that incredible ambiguity in what we're doing. But yeah, talk about the pity of war, but also be absolutely honest about the fact that we're writing fight scenes and reading fight scenes because they're damn enjoyable to read and write.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that. And RJ, if you could give us your take.
I'm going to say no. No, we're not. And with the caveat, you cannot control how other people experience what you create. That's beyond your control. And to show that, actually, before Nick mentioned All Quiet on the Western Front, I'd written All Quiet on the Western Front down as an example of violence that is not glorifying war, because I had to switch it off. I just found it unbearable. It's horrific and brilliant because of that. As a war film that you would never watch that and ever think war is a good idea. It's an awful film. Awful in a really good way, in that it accomplishes what it wants to accomplish. And I write books with violence, but violence that affects people. You're not meant to read the violence and think, oh, this is great. The Bone Ships is a story of slow and terrible attrition on people who are the good guys, but one of them commits a war crime and it doesn't go well. I write books about Pyrrhic victories. War is not a win and it's not glamorous, and you don't have heroes who are celebrated. You have people who think they're good and find themselves doing terrible things, and it breaks them. And if you go away from my books thinking, that was lovely and exciting, I want to get on a ship and kill people, I failed. You should read my books and go away from thinking, we shouldn't be doing these things. What is it? What is wrong with us that we put somebody in a situation where they can kill? We're a speck of dust existing in an infinite universe, and we get this one chance, so we shouldn't be killing each other. I don't think I'm writing books that glorify violence, but I've no doubt that there are people who will read my books and enjoy the violence and experience it as glorifying, but that's beyond my control. I mean, you can only write with the author's intention.
There's actually, sorry, there's a lovely, lovely bit in a Mary Renner novel I think about a lot when I think about this kind of thing, where she fictionalized, she has an exchange, you know, Plato, who famously wrote The Republic, he would ban playwrights and poets. And she has this lovely bit where she has an exchange between Plato and an actor. And they're talking about, actually, it's one of Plato's disciples and an actor, and they're talking about the fact that Plato said, you know, he wants to ban, in The Republic, he would ban plays and poets. Because of this, because, you know, they're presenting violence, they're presenting women sort of personally powerful. You know, they're presenting stuff which in Greek society is deeply immoral. They're talking about moral concepts. It says you'd ban all of that. And then the dramatist says, really? And he says, well, okay, well, maybe you'd have a play where someone, only the good characters speak. So the hero comes on and makes a speech about what a good person he is. And then someone comes on and says, oh, some bad stuff happens off stage, but we're not going to tell you about that. And then hero makes another speech about how good he is. And that's the whole of the play, to which our hero, the actor, Nicostratus, absolutely wonderfully replies, but wouldn't it be rather dull? To which the great Plato has no answer. And that, I think about that a lot when I think about all these kind of questions. But wouldn't it be rather dull?
And so, Miles, you know, would it be rather dull? And are we sort of, you know, writing pro-war things?
Evan, I think about this probably way too much. You may be familiar with the term war porn. And I believe that instead of a black and white issue, this is a million shades of gray issues. Mm-hmm. So I think it is possible to write a fantasy novel that glorifies conflict and death and is, in fact, war porn. And I think maybe it's possible to avoid that. And so the question I'm going to try and answer is how to avoid it, in as much as this is a writing panel. But I first want to tell a story and say the night before the air assault on Iraq began in Desert Storm in 1990, my squadron was watching Apocalypse Now on television. And as the child of two hardcore pacifists, I had been brought up to believe that Apocalypse Now was an anti-war movie. But it turns out that it's a helicopter assault movie, and that if you're a naval aviator, you just watch the helicopter assault over and over again and skip all the rest of Apocalypse Now. And I offer that to say, yeah, I worry about the scenes. I worry about the scenes being taken out of context. I worry about all of that. So I'm going to daringly brag up one of my own books. So I just wrote this book, and there's lots of fight scenes in Against All Gods. So this is my Bronze Age fantasy. But I decided to alleviate my own conscience to write heroic pacifists. So I have a whole group of heroic pacifists, and they are heroically pacifist. They will not take life. They will not even participate in the taking of life. They won't even use their weather magic to sink other people's ships. And so that allowed me to deal with all kinds of moral questions. And it turns out that sometimes they use politics to sink other people's ships. And then they worry about that. They ask themselves whether that was a moral decision or not. And I think as long as we make the reader ask the questions, so that was my advertisement for myself. But look, as long as we present some alternating points of view, show some horror, and maybe even discuss some of the philosophy involved, I feel like we're doing a fair job of offering the reader other choices besides just accepting that war is being glorified. I've known a lot of soldiers who questioned what they were doing. And that may come as a surprise to people who haven't served in the military, but you know, those are just people like you who happen for whatever reason to be doing their 4 years or 20 years in the military. And they ask all the same questions about violence, about whether the empire they're serving or the country they're serving is doing the right thing. And I feel like by sometimes representing those conversations in the trenches or whatever, you are again helping the reader avoid the war porn moment. The glorious cavalry charge may be glorious, but the people participating in it the night before were scared to death. And if you can cover both of those, you maybe are getting somewhere.
Thank you.
One of the times I knew I got something right is in my second assassin books, they ride around basically on war elk with massive antlers and fangs. And as soon as I'd gone with them, I thought I have to write a cavalry charge. That's what I want to do. But I'd not written a character that fitted into that as a cavalry charge. So I engineered a way into writing it. And I have a friend who's a medieval historian lecturer. And they told me that they'd been using that sequence to illustrate the absolute pants-shitting terror of that kind of combat. And that just filled me with joy. I just thought, yeah, I've done that then. Pants-shitting terror, that's what I want my reader to get out there. That's what I want them to think war is.
I just wanted to say one more thing, because this subject is so near and dear to my heart, which is, and I was a military professional. So I came to terms a long time ago with the fact that I was willingly going to take part in this violence thing. I believe that what we're watching in Ukraine right now should demonstrate to our generation that while sometimes violence is one empire trying to seize oil rights from another empire, I speak of America's Gulf War that I participated in, sometimes good, honorable people are simply trying to keep themselves from being dominated by not so nice people. Mm-hmm. And in that case, I feel like violence is allowed, maybe even encouraged. And I'll bet there are people in Ukraine who are asking really hard questions about the whole conflict, about its origins, etc., because they're fighting their cousins, but they still realize that they have to fight. And one of the tropes, and Anna spoke very movingly about tropes, one of the tropes that sometimes worries me in fantasy is good versus evil. Because as a military historian, I look at how very seldom good fights evil. You know, World War II was a little bit cut and dried, but really mostly, if you think about the 18th century or the 17th century in Europe, it's some nation states fighting other nation states virtually identical to them over not very much that you could describe, at least viewed from outer space. And I worry about good versus evil because, you know, orcs, they're evil, so we're allowed to kill them without too much thought. Whereas people just like us who have a very slightly different religion or a very slightly different race or a very slightly different view on sexual matters, killing them might have a whole different burden for the reader. Anyway,
I think that's absolutely a key point for fantasy particularly. I mean, that kind of, because it is so easy for fantasy and science fiction that you can have zombies, orcs, robots, you know, you can have things that are not alive. So it's so very easy to fall into that very dehumanizing, you know, the enemy is totally dehumanized, the enemy, and therefore, and you are so falling so easily into the most dangerous and frightening, you know, we are simply the kind of, the Legolas Gimli, it's just, you know, it's we've killed 50 of the, I've killed 50 of the enemy, well, I've killed 51. And that kind of, and again, to come back to that kind of, even in good versus evil situations, that kind of, you know, these are people, even that kind of pointing out that, you know, even in the absolute kind of abyssal moral abomination, which was what was, you know, the liberation of Auschwitz, say, you know, even at that point, those concentration camp guards had, you know, a mother who was heartbroken that her son had died. You know, that it is so easy for us writing fantasies to say these, you know, you're writing on people who are not people. You can so easily, literally other the enemy. And in the end, even at that point of absolute moral abomination, these are people you are talking about. These are people who care about people, and people who care about them, who possibly are going to leave their children destitute, who are going to leave their elderly mother completely broken and alone. And it's not saying, oh, well, you're not, I'm not sort of saying, oh, well, in that case, one shouldn't. Not, oh, well, that doesn't, that means this person is not, what they're doing is not a moral abomination. But still, you know, the fact that you have to kill them will leave others distraught. And it's that, it's so easy for fantasy to rely on, to just gloss over that. The orcs, Tolkien's orcs do not have parents, they do not have children, they do not have a peer, they have, and yet, I mean, there's almost that sense they have comradeship, just that sense that if one orc dies, others will be devastated. But it's so easy to forget when you're writing fantasy, particularly or science fiction, that in the end, these are all people, right? Everything, even the worst person is a person who has people who love them. And I think that's something that we need to remember. You need to remember that when you're writing, I think, is a really, when you're writing battle scenes, that, you know, these are not just even the foot, these are people.
Because otherwise it doesn't. And thank you everyone for sort of really sort of pouring it out there for that last question. It was it was perhaps a little heavy, but I appreciate it, you know, contributing there.
And, maybe really important too, Evan. And it was a great question. I think every panel on writing fight scenes should have to face that question.
Thank you. And you know what? And we do have to go. So we're going to shut it down right now. I want to thank everybody on the panel for being here, for spending your time with us, and for talking about this. I learned a lot, and you really helped me as well, even with that final question especially. So thank you. And to everybody watching, thank you for showing up. Thank you for showing up for TBRCon 2023. I hope you enjoy the rest of the panels. If this one is any indication, you're probably going to learn a ton, and I look forward to watching the rest of them as well. So thank you, everyone. Thank you to TBRCon 2023, and wishing everybody a wonderful rest of the evening and a wonderful week at the con.
Thanks, Evan.
That was great.
My pleasure. That was brilliant, Evan. Thank you. Yeah.